call the meeting to order. Calling together the Fluvanna County Board of Supervisors meeting with the elected officials, state and federal elected officials. We will begin our meeting with the Pledge of Allegiance and a moment of silence. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. The first order of business is the adoption of the agenda. Do I have a motion?
I move we adopt the agenda.
So move.
Okay, moved by Mrs. Yeager and seconded by Mrs. Booker. Take a roll call vote. Mrs. Yeager?
Aye.
Mrs. Booker?
Aye.
Mr. Weaver, is he on?
Mr. Weaver's not on and Mr. Sheridan.
Apologize, Mr. Weaver and Mr. Sheridan are not on, so we have Mr. O'Brien here, and he votes aye. And so the motion is adopted, 3-2 absent. First, I'll begin with welcomes and introductions from everybody. I'm Tony O'Brien. I'm the Vice Chair of the Fluvanna County Board of Supervisors. I'm honored to have our distinguished guests with us and look forward to an excellent meeting, even in these COVID and difficult times that we face as we move into the next year. So with that, I will begin with our elected officials. I think I'll start with them. So Mrs. Yeager, if you'd like to go ahead and introduce yourself.
Hello, I'm Mrs. Yeager, or Patricia Yeager, and I represent the Palmyra District.
Mrs. Booker?
Good morning. As you know, I speak, but you all don't hear it for a couple of minutes, so be patient. I am from the Fort Union District. This is my 13th year on the Board of Supervisors. Glad to be here and welcome. I'm looking forward to hearing things that's going on in the General Assembly. Thank you.
Excellent. I will jump right to Congressman Riggleman.
Hey everybody, Congressman Denver Riggleman, 5th District of Virginia, and thanks for having me today.
Okay, well, and Senator Peek.
Good morning everybody, Warren Peek, State Senate, 22nd District, live in. Lots of places, good to be with y'all this morning. Sorry we can't be in person.
Very well. And Mr. Ware.
Good morning, this is Lee Ware, and I represent the 65th District, essentially eastern Fluvanna and several counties east of there. And it's a pleasure to be with you. I'm sorry for the circumstances under which we're going, but it's really a joy to be with you and to hear your concerns and to express to you what we're experiencing in this unprecedented virtual session downtown.
Thank you very much, Senator Ware. Senator Peek?
Delegate Bell.
I'm sorry, Delegate Bell. I apologize.
Good morning, everyone. Nice to see you again. This is Rob Bell. I represent the Western precincts in Fluvanna. Thank you.
Excellent. And we have Mr. Goodwin here as well, too, with Mr. who's also joining Senator Peek. Yes. Thank you. Glad to have you here. Absolutely. So I'll just go with the folks on the Zoom call here, Mr. Sheridan, Mel Sheridan.
Hey guys, Mel Sheridan, Commissioner. Good to see everybody.
Morning, Mel.
Morning, sir.
I apologize. I missed Ms. Mallory, who is representing Mr. Senator Kane's staff here. Mrs. Mallory, would you please introduce yourself?
Morning, everyone. I'm Taye Mallory. I'm the Regional Director for the Office of U.S. Senator Tim Kaine. Senator Kaine sends his regrets. He is in Washington, D.C. on official business, but I'm just looking forward to being able to learn and get to know everyone this morning. Thank you.
Excellent. Ms. Treadway?
Tristana Treadway. I'm the clerk of the Circuit Court here in Fluvanna.
I will say, as a disclosure, unfortunately, I can't stay on the call, but a few minutes, we have court starting at 9:30 with a substitute judge, so I'm going to have to skip out in a few minutes, but I did want to at least join in the beginning. Excellent. Thank you.
Excellent. Thank you. We'll miss you. Mr. Striblin.
Good morning, everyone. Don Striblin, Executive Director of Blue Banner County Public Schools. Glad to be here.
All right. And I think at this point in time, I'd like to have Mrs. Lenher introduce herself.
Good morning, everyone. I'm Linda Lenher, and I am the Blue Banner County Treasurer. And I'm glad to be here this morning.
Excellent. And I should note that we also have Jordan Hargrave on as well, too, with Mr. Bell, Delegate Bell. Jordan Hargrave, would you like to introduce yourself?
Hi, I'm Jordan Hargrave, and I work for Delegate Bell.
Steve Harvey.
Steve Harvey
Steve
is with, I'm sorry, I apologize.
Congressman Riggleman's office.
Congressman Riggleman's office as well, too. Thank you.
Good morning, everybody. Outreach Director for Congressman Denver Riggleman.
Excellent. Glad to have you on board.
Everybody coming here today.
Thank you. And we have Mr. Blunt from the Thomas Jefferson Planning District Commission.
Hey, good morning, everyone. David Blunt, the Director of Legislative Services for TJPDC. Glad that we're able to do this once again. Thank you for having me.
And next we have Mrs. Herbert.
Karen Hebert with Social Services.
Social Services, okay. And,
and we also have, I think we have a Dr. Kelly is on the call too. And is he on the iPhone possibly?
He is.
Or is he behind?
Well, there he is, he's on.
What's that?
Okay.
There we go.
Good morning.
Dr. Kelly.
Good morning, James Kelly, school board for Paul Meyer District. Good morning, all.
And of course,
we've got one other that I'm on.
I believe that's Brenda Gillum is on the iPhone.
That's Brenda Gillum's iPhone. Mrs. Gillum, is that you there?
She's not speaking.
Okay.
It is.
Well, that's, that, that's
actually, this is Shirley Stewart. I'm on one of the iPhones too, and I am the school board representative for the Rivanna District.
Thank you for joining us. And we have an N Netwich. Do we know who that
is? This is Nicole Netwich. I'm legislative staff for Congressman Riggleman.
Oh, excellent. Well, very well represented by Congressman Riggleman today. Excellent. And Mr. Dahl?
Yeah, Eric Dahl, Savannah County Administrator.
And I guess around the room, should we go around the room?
We have lots of staff here today.
Yeah,
like that, in just, you know, a little degree of time. We want to make sure that we want, you know, get to some of the topics and really kind of discuss, you know, what's going on in the General Assembly. And I know we're, you know, some individuals are short on time this morning here, so we want to make sure we can get to some comments. And I think Senator Peake, I think he may be a little short on time. Is that correct, Mr. Goodwin?
Yes.
Excellent. Okay. Well, I will at least recognize Captain Wells here since he's representing the sheriff's
Major office. Wells now.
Major Wells. Excellent. Okay. Is there a quorum for the school board to call itself to order?
There are only two.
I don't think so. Okay. That was the next item. So, general remarks by the legislators. And I will allow Mr. Peake to start since he's short on time. This morning, Senator Peake.
All right, thank you, Mr. O'Brien. Yes, I'm here for a little while, flying out a little bit earlier later this morning to go see my in-laws. It was supposed to have been their 60th wedding anniversary. We scheduled in August and then had to move it to now due to special session. And I think they come out and be on a budget. I'll tell you that we've been briefed on it, but I don't have a whole lot of details. There's only one Republican senator that's been somewhat involved. I know that they've been meeting with the House, and that there's some agreement with the House, but apparently the governor's not on board with what the Democrats in the House and the Senate have done. And I know maybe Delegates Bell and Ware may have more to tell you. I was talking to Delegate Ferris, who's on the Appropriations Committee. He said, that the governor spelled it out, some of the protect money. But we've had very little, we have not addressed it at all in this special session, but there's much to do with the CARES Act money. I think the budget committees are talking about it, and that's part of the dispute with the governor. But this special session could have been more about the budget. We were in session for a month and a half and started talking about the budget a little bit last week, and now they're voting on the budget, and we've not talked about it in the special session at all. And it's been very disappointing that we have not gone through the budget to see what effects have the virus has had on that. I will check, but it seems like that the budget is not going to be that much different than what we passed in March. And that's all I have at this point. I'll be happy to answer questions.
Any questions? Or maybe we'll take questions all at the end.
Okay.
Great.
Yeah, if you was maybe want to go down the list there on the agenda, we just call off the different
delegates. Delegate Ware.
Good morning. Can you hear me?
Yes, sir.
This has been a very difficult session. This is my 23rd year in the legislature, and as Senator Peake indicated, this has been a special session completely unlike any other, and purportedly called by the governor in the when he made the call in the spring to consider the COVID effects on the state budget, and therefore in many respects which will affect you all at the local level. And yet, as, again, as Senator Peake said, we have only in the last week, a month and a half into the budget, into the special session, taken up the budget. Many of those details remain to be worked out by the conference committee, which has not yet been formally set, although I expect that momentarily. On the budget side, we have because of largely COVID-related restrictions on business and the unemployment results that have also come from that, we have a budget shortfall of about $2.8 billion in the general fund, which is a very significant amount. Some of that can be backfilled with CARES Act money, and as long as it has a direct connection with COVID difficulties, and I'm sure you all are working through some of the same things. Probably the most significant local connection that I can see, and my understanding is that both the Senate and the House and I believe the governor's original budget have all contained provisions to, in effect, hold harmless the school divisions on ADM funding. Because a number of school divisions have seen students going to homeschooling, going to private schools, working in these pods, there have been a number of school divisions that have seen a decline in their anticipated September 30th ADM. And so one of the things that we've supported, and this was there was a unanimous specific vote in the House, I would expect a similar thing would be the case in the Senate, to ensure that school divisions, even if they don't have all the students that they anticipated this year in opening, that we will furnish the funds to the matching funds from the Commonwealth for that purpose. So I think that's probably the single most significant budget action, and it looks right now pretty, I think I can say with a fair amount of confidence that will be there. So I guess that's probably the highlight. We've spent a lot of time on what has been referred to as police reform, criminal justice reform. Both the other gentlemen on this call probably are more intimately involved since they serve on committees relevant to that, with that particular element of what we've done in the special session. So I guess that's probably the key things to report.
Thank you very much. Certainly good news about the ADM if that happens. Delegate Bell.
Well, good morning, everyone. So as Lee said, we have been in a virtual session, which has sort of been stops and starts, oh my goodness, almost 60 days at this point. what it means is we are meeting. We had a meeting yesterday, but we don't go to Richmond and we don't meet continuously every day. It looks like we are almost at the end. All the bills yesterday were put into conference. That means the bills that hadn't yet passed, they assign who will be tasked with trying to work on a final compromise. As Lee said, there's two large topics. The budget is the one he spoke about, or the second would be what I would sort of broadly call, let's just call it police and criminal justice bills. I'm happy to talk about those with length. Most of those have gone through the committee that I serve on, of course, Justice Committee. Some are passing, some are being rejected. So some of the more controversial measures, like an effort to reduce the penalties for assault on a police officer or a sheriff's deputy, that was defeated. There was a qualified immunity bill, that was defeated. In each case, they got through one body, the House or the Senate, but was defeated in another body. There was an amendment with regards to reducing funding for the police. Whether that is defined as defund the police or not, I will leave to other observers, but that measure does not appear to be in either the House or Senate budget. It could recreate itself in theory out of conference, but usually the conferees work between the House and the Senate now with entirely new language, so that probably is not going to proceed. Have been working with Mr. Hayslip and Sheriff Hess as these issues have come forward. I think most of you know Jeff Hayslip is actually the president of the Columbus Attorneys Association, it's called BACA, but he's actually the president this year, so he's been very involved as these measures have come forward. I saw one of the issues coming up, I'll just flag it and we can talk about it further, but it was impact on the judicial system. There is a proposal that is still live that would, and there's an argument about how much, but would increase the number of jury trials by a substantial amount. That bill has, the bill went through, a reenactment clause was put on it, which means it won't pass unless it is again voted on, which means it's not something in the short run. However, it's in conference, so I'm not on the conference committee, can't predict what will happen. If that happened, it would certainly impact jurisdictions like Flavanna, where they have one courtroom, one judge, probably more than some of the larger jurisdictions that have a lot more judges, a lot more ability to be flexible. So happy to talk about all those issues further, and thank you for having me today.
Excellent. Thank you very much. Next, Ms. Mallory, would you like to update us what is going on from the U.S. Senate standpoint? Ms. Mallory, are you still there? She's probably stepped out for a minute. Oh, there we are. Excellent.
Can you see me?
Yes,
can you
ma'am.
See me? All right, very good. Senator Kane, we're here this morning. I think the main message here we just want to share with you and many of the other public servants around Virginia is just to thank you for doing a wonderful job in this unprecedented year. I think unprecedented is the most overused word of the year, but it is certainly appropriate. He just wants to thank public officials for going above and beyond to serve your citizens and your residents during a trying time where budgets are tight and folks are confused and maybe even a little frustrated, but just being able to serve your community with dignity really goes a long way. Just know that we're always here to help you all if you are in need of assistance. We have a fantastic constituent services team in Richmond who are helping constituents all over Virginia navigate our Social Security process and navigate our very complicated VEC, I'm sure many of our offices, and I know that the delegates' offices have seen an abundance of phone calls from constituents regarding unemployment claims. And we are working closely with the VEC and their team to make sure our constituents are getting the attention that they deserve, which we, in a time that we know we have an incredibly high volume of folks filing for unemployment. In addition to that, we are helping folks secure immigration, resolve their immigration issues, and we're also helping folks, those who are traveling, secure passports, which is a process that was put on hold for quite some time. Just know that if you are in need of any services, either via education, legislative, or any other matter, I'm your direct contact to the senator. I'm in the Richmond office. I'm going to put my contact information in the chat if anybody needs that. But beyond that, I didn't have anything else to share. But I'm willing to answer questions to the best of my ability later on. Thank you.
Excellent. And I believe Mr. Fooey is not with us. Is that correct?
And I don't believe we have anyone Mr. from U.S. Senator Warner's office.
All right, Congressman Riggleman, would you please give us an update? And first, I'd like to thank you for your service, since this might be one of the last times we get to see you in person here. It's always amazing that the amount of patience and the amount of effort and the amount of heart that people give to service, and everybody should be welcome. But as you are retiring, sir, I specifically wanted to say thank you.
Thank you very much, and it's good to see so many good friends on here. And thanks for all the delegates, and you know, Ms. Mallory, my greetings to Tim Kaine, but also the delegates on here and everybody that actually is in the State Center, Mark Peek, a good friend of mine. Thank you guys for your service. I know it's been chaotic in special session. By the way, it's been a little bit chaotic on Congress, too, if you can imagine. I probably just understated that a little bit, but it is so good to see all of you. The thing is, I'm going to try to be specific to the 5th District, because if I talked about everything that's going on in Congress right now, I think I could be here an hour, and I think it'd be pretty crazy. But I'm going to start with health care. For the 5th District, we had a couple bills come out of committee that I was the Republican lead on. I think you guys would be excited about. Number one is addiction. You guys know the 5th District has been pretty crazy when it comes to opioid addiction, even with cartel activity in the 5th District of Virginia. So we did get, which I'm excited about, is the SORG, the State Opioid Response Grants. We were able to get that out of committee for $1 billion a year for the next 5 years to help with opioid addiction enforcement, rehabilitation, training. So very excited about that. I took 2 years to get that bill through, and now it's finally through committee. I think we're going to get a 4 vote for the 5th. That's very important, because a lot of you guys know on infrastructure, I was the co-sponsor lead for rural broadband, and it was allowed us to get about $62 million for the 5th District in rural broadband. And that sort of links in with healthcare also, not only with, you know, what's happening with SORG and what we need with addiction, but also the fact is right now, the Fair Care Act, we were able to bipartisan start looking at actually changing pre-existing conditions from ACA over to HIPAA, which will help a lot of the senior citizens in the 5th District. As a lot of you know, we have an inordinate amount of senior citizens in the 5th that we have to take care of. So a lot of things are coming out of committee for us. Ensuring Lasting Smiles Act that helps close loopholes for children with congenital deformities also came out of committee 2 weeks ago for the 5th District. That's huge. We have a lot of people here who have children that have ectodermal dysplasia, and that was really the start here. And by the way, Rob knows, and two of the Cozers, this is where the start was here in Charlottesville and Albemarle County, and the 5th District also, and down into Fluvanna, everywhere. So really excited about that. As far as infrastructure, I talked about broadband. We're still working that. I'm hoping that we can get another $50 million next year for broadband. Sadly, I won't be able to push the amendments. I hope whoever takes my place is able to do that. I've worked on that a long time. I'm excited about that. As far as ag is concerned, you guys know I'm a hemp fanatic. The hemp opportunity zone has been put in, and as you guys know, the deregulatory letters I put into USDA has allowed hemp to explode here, especially hemp crop insurance. So for the 5th District, that's been huge also. There's about 15 bills that I've put in or now are out of committee, and sadly, I want to get them votes before January 2nd. I think we can do that. But here's the other exciting thing, guys. I mean, when you talk about places like Danville, $7.5 million on the NDAA lines, I was able to get a red line in for that. And also for the PPP and the CARES Act, one of the most exciting things, I know this sounds absolutely nerdish and geeky, but I was able to red line and get in the community bank leverage ratio drop so we can loan more money from community banks to businesses and people that have been affected by COVID. These are emotional things for me, being on the Financial Services Committee and the National Security Subcommittees. And I'm just very excited. It seems like in the last 3 to 4 months, the 5th District has just exploded with bills coming out of committee, or maybe even getting 4 votes. So I know there's going to be a lot of questions. You guys know you can reach out to me anytime. Again, thank you all for your service. I'm always going to be around, regardless of whether I'm elected official or not. There's people here, dear friends of mine. And again, just listening, you know, to Mark and Rob and Lee and everybody else on here, Eric, you guys know what public service is like. I was never involved with politics before, but now I thought I theoretically knew how things were, but now I can tell you I can practically know how politics can help and also how it can bite you in the rear parts. So, as you guys know, but you guys, I just want to, about Fluvanna County, my dad lived in Palmyra. It's amazing. It's the first time I ever hunted or went coon hunting and also hunt with dogs with deer with Fluvanna County in 1983. It's just amazing that my dad lived there. The Coons family that my dad married into was from Fluvanna County. Spent a lot of my childhood there. And The thing is, I'm not going anywhere, guys. I got 50 acres up here in Nelson. I'm not going to stop making whiskey. I'm not going to stop doing counterterrorism work. So I'll still be around. But again, I appreciate all you guys. I know what you go through. I'm always going to be here as a friend. I have no hard feelings. What an incredible experience for me. A lot of love in my heart for everybody there that's on this call. And you guys know that. That it doesn't matter what happens after January 2nd. I still will support you guys in any way I can. My phone is always open. And whether we disagree or agree, I always count you guys as friends because I think we all have 5th District and all your constituents. We have their hearts, you know, sort of in our hands where we need to help them and do the best that we can. And thank you guys very much. I don't want to take all your time. You guys are very awesome. You've got a special place in my heart, and you take care. By the way, Mel Sheridan, we'll go hunting a little bit more here soon. So thank you guys again, and I appreciate all of you.
Well, Congressman, we'd like to welcome you back to the Nevada.
Bring your filth and jacket again, please.
Yes.
You got it.
We've got lots of opportunity for you to expand your distillery business.
Please feel free to bring some of your samples.
Well, if I have to, Mel, I will. I see that, guys. By the way, that was actually, somebody asked for that. I didn't offer that. It's just for ethics. Thank you, Mel.
We didn't need any samples.
But I appreciate all you guys. You know, listen, I'm still happy. Thank you guys again for everything, and thank you for your service. If you need anything in Fluvanna, you guys know I'm right here regardless. I still got all my connections on the Hill, and I'm happy to use them for Fluvanna County. You guys are great. Keep up the service, and I'll always be around for you. Thank you so much.
Well, I certainly appreciate your courage and your service, but also personally, as a business owner, you held some roundtables and some public meetings, I guess, on the phone. You were very active on that, on the PPE. And I found those calls to be very interesting and really thought your outreach was superior. So kudos to you on great staff and the services that you provided to our constituents.
Thanks, and I don't want to even belabor it, but my staff is incredible. We have I think, 3 members maybe on the call now. And let me tell you, when you have people like our district staff and federal staff, like the Steves, the Coles, the Jasons, the Haleys, they're still here for you. I will not stop working until January 2nd. That is my word to you guys. And I still got a little bit of push, so if you need anything on the federal side, please do not hesitate to reach out, because my staff is so much smarter than me. So I'm sure we can get some things done.
Excellent. Mr. Blunt. I'm sorry.
I want to say thank you, gentlemen, for everything you have done, and look forward to seeing you down the road.
Hey, Mark, anytime, buddy. You know that. I'm still here after January 2nd, man. You just come visit me, buddy.
I'm happy to take time out for a love fest for Mr. Riggleman if anybody wants to pipe in as well.
No, listen, I've had enough love. Trust me, being in Congress for 2 years, I've had all the love I can handle. I got to tell you that. You guys are fantastic. Thank you so much.
Excellent.
Thank you, Denver.
Go Army.
Ah! Air Force, brother. Air Force.
Sorry, guys, I'm going to have to sign off. My wife has advised me that the plane is not going to be. I'm not a congressman. So thank you, guys. George is going to stay on and fill me in on that. As you know, call me anytime. I'll be in town next week, and we'll go over everything. We should have a full budget next week, so I'll be happy to work with you any way I can. Thank you, guys.
Excellent. Thank you. Safe travels. Next, we have David Blunt from the Thomas Jefferson Planning District Commission, our legislative liaison.
Mr. Chairman, would you be looking for some specific updates from me? How did you want to proceed?
I think that we've heard a little bit from our legislative branch there, and if you'd like to make some comments on some of the programs that they mentioned and what they were working on, I mean, certainly, you know, how the CARES Act is being deployed by the state. I think they're doing an excellent job so far on that. Broadband, of course, being a huge initiative. Election, I mean, I would say the, you know, concerns around electoral security, those are also important. So there's a lot to talk about.
I think maybe, we always talk about budget. It's one of the things that's most critical, I think, to local governments and school divisions in terms of state funding for the local budget, so I can probably add a little bit more detail to the good reports that have already been made with regard to the House and Senate budgets. Certainly concur, it looks like that the provision for the ADM is gonna be in the final budget. That's about $95 million. I don't think broadband was specifically mentioned, but both the House and the Senate budgets do include money for that was actually proposed in the governor's August budget for the BODi program, which is $50 million in the current fiscal year. And then I believe the total would be $35 million in fiscal year 22. I think the House budget has part of that money as a contingent item. I don't know the details yet, but you may have seen that the governor made an announcement yesterday that he's going to make an additional $30 million available from the CARES Act funding for broadband projects. And it's my understanding that some additional information will be going out to county administrators, local administrators, possibly today, with a Q&A session on that sometime in the early part of next week. The CARES Act funding, I think the House and Senate budgets do treat that differently. And I think it was alluded to that the governor's not entirely happy with what the budgets look like at this point. That the House budget, as proposed last week, does direct the fund, most of the remaining state allocation of the CARES Act to specific purposes. The Senate budget less so, but there's some big ticket items in there, including I think there's about $120 million for utility debt offsets, which I think is going to be probably a bigger issue as we move forward, into the pandemic. There's also, I believe, another slosh of maybe $200 million for K-12 education to help them deal with reopening schools or providing instruction on a virtual basis as well. You mentioned elections. There was $2 million in the governor's proposed budget for prepaid postage for the early voting for mail-in ballots, and I believe the House budget has provided $10 million more on top of that to assist with elections, but that is not in the Senate budget. The Senate budget has a lot of restorations of some of the unallocated dollars, really that are a reflection of their priorities. From back in March when the budget was approved, and a lot of those, I think about $130 some million in health and human services or health and human resources areas. So and then of course, as we've mentioned, the police and criminal justice issues, a lot of those bills, as Delegate Bell mentioned, are in conference, so we don't know the outcome of those yet, but I believe the House package of bills, there's I believe close to $28 million in the budget for those, whereas the Senate budget I think has about $11 million for those. So those are just some of the additional highlights budget-wise. Yeah, I would concur with the legislators and maybe some frustration with this special session, the length of it, just kind of I think it's been difficult to navigate from those people in my shoes because of the lack of an operating resolution that we usually have that really dictate, how the session proceeds, what the timelines are and deadlines are. So, and then of course we all know that, we're 3 months away from the next regular session, which will be the short 46-day session. And we'll be doing budget again. So, we may be seeing the legislature approve a budget next week, and then we're going to turn around and have the governor introduce a budget proposal for the remainder of the biennium in about 2 months in December. So, never a dull moment. I'm glad to answer any questions on that or anything else that you might have.
Excellent. Thank you very much. Mr. Sheridan's not with us, so I guess I'll speak briefly here. In Flavanna, of course, we continue to appreciate all the efforts that are happening both at the federal and state level to support the county during these difficult times. Certainly, the funds that we have received have made a difference, and the support that we're receiving in terms of, say, the ADM programs that you're talking about will make a huge difference. Likewise, Flavanna is maybe a little bit more fortunate than some of our fellow counties in the sense that our revenue sources are heavily dependent on real estate taxes, and we've had a boom in terms of real estate growth in the county due to really low inflation rates and a migration out of the cities, I would say. So things are looking good for Fluvanna from that standpoint. But key to our success in the long run is economic development, and it's still a primary focus for our county, and maintaining and strengthening our core services, which of course includes the school system and all the challenges that the school system has. So I would say that Fluvanna is been fortunate so far, but still faces lots of challenges and still looks forward to a lot of support and assistance from the state and the federal level in order to make sure that, you know, we can build a county that is successful and a great place for our citizens to thrive in. So I know that's very general, but I'll leave it to that, and I'll let my colleagues jump into some more specifics there. Next we have Mrs. Booker. Mrs. Booker, would you like to make some comments?
Good morning. Yes. Can you hear me?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, all right. As I have listened to the legislators, I don't know, I have such a feeling that because of the situation that we are going through, and I hope we never have to go through it again, is that sometimes when you have conflicts and you have a more difficult time, it brings out a different level of work for you. And I just feel like I have received a lot of information, probably more than I have in the past from the legislators. I think it pushes all of us to look at things differently. It also pushes us to work with each other differently, and it brings out the best in us. I believe the Commonwealth will come through this in flying colors, and I think that we are going to see progress in the Commonwealth regardless of what is going on. So I appreciate and very fortunate to be able to be a supervisor and to be in this most difficult time, but yet and still have an optimistic feeling about where we're heading, and hopefully at the end that it's going to be a positive experience for us all. So I thank the legislators, and they've really given me some good information. I've never heard Congressman Riggleman speak before. I enjoyed what he had to say, and I could feel his feeling for the position that he has held for 2 years, and I appreciate his comments. Thank you.
Thank you. Mrs. Eager.
Good morning. I just hope that we can come together and work together in this difficult time. It's been very hard for a lot of people, and we are trying to help one another. And I appreciate the work that the legislators have done, and I hope that they can continue to work together. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Dahl, I believe I'm supposed to ask everybody on the check marks here? Or the
no, like I said, I guess I'll make a few comments and then I'll hand it over to some school board members too. Okay. As well. You know, first I'd just like to thank all the legislators for being here this morning and taking part. You know, as we've been doing every year, we're doing things a little differently this year under, as elders have said, the unprecedented times. But I'm glad that everyone can take part in this. You know, we've as a county, you know, as Mr. O'Brien stated, we've seen somewhat of a silver lining in some things in our sales tax, for instance, you know, where other more urban areas are seeing reductions in their sales tax. We are seeing increases in our sales tax because families are kind of being hunkered down here. But besides that, you know, I think we still have a lot of challenges. Obviously, every year, unfunded mandates are continuing to be a challenge. You know, the 45-day early voting We've had to change what we're doing as far as where we're where we have our registrar's location and some of the expenses that go along with that. You know, CARES itself and the pandemic has created a tremendous amount of work and just difficulties in everything we do, from meetings like we are doing here today to what the schools have to go through. But like I said, I appreciate everyone being here today, and you know, we look forward to kind of going through some of the topics and having some good dialogue. And I think the only other ones we haven't had a comments from that are here elected officials is Mr. Sheridan and Mrs. Lenher.
That's correct. Yeah, Mr. Sheridan, how are you today? Are you with us there? Yes, there you are. You're on mute, Mr. Sheridan.
No, I was, but I think I'm good to go now, Mr. O'Brien, but thank you, sir.
Yeah.
Hey, I appreciate the opportunity just to, you know, to be in the meeting with everyone, particularly our state and federal elected officials. So thank you all very much for taking the time. I just had a couple of quick things I was going to touch base on. And at the General Assembly level, y'all have been very good to us and very able to take that extent. Certainly beyond the commissioner's office, which, you know, all of the constitutional offices. I mean, it's not 100% funded, but it's getting there. We're making progress. And in these, you know, unprecedented times, we really appreciate that effort. The deputies, regardless of whether the commissioners or circuit court or, you know, treasurer, et cetera, Master Deputy Program for the Sheriff's Department and the Commonwealth Attorney's Office literally worked very hard to achieve the certification requirements. In my case, it's a 3-year process. So there is some reward for that. I currently have one deputy on staff that qualified, Master Deputy Commissioner. Hasn't received the career development fund yet, but she's getting closer, she's on the list. So if you have any opportunity in Richmond, as a conduit, Matrix Appeal, and my counterparts down there, Terry Yow, President of our association, please do everything you can to try to fund those, you know, small increases in development. And thank you. I will say that one of the programs which I've been watching with interest, you know, tax relief for they're disabled veterans. Of course, it's a statewide program, and that slowly takes a toll. It's great for the individuals, but it does take make an impact on the revenue stream for the locality. We don't have nearly as many retired disabled veterans in Savannah as you might have in Prince George or, you know, Norfolk area, or something around Fort Lee. You know, really even less than what it is. But for those localities, those jurisdictions, it's slowly taking a bite out of the revenues. And that will be, I guess, compounded after November with the decision, I guess, by our voters across Commonwealth is to also approve one of the vehicles for disabled veterans to be tax-free. I can tell you that I anticipate that passing. I personally am going to vote for it, but it didn't come with any real definition. It didn't say which vehicle. Most families have more than one vehicle. It was most expensive, the least expensive, is it the oldest, is it the newest. So we'll be in a position where we have to, I guess, once it passes, if it passes this November, that we'll have to, you know, flesh that out. But from my perspective, you know, we're going to take the path of least resistance and whatever the vehicle of highest revenue assessed value is what we will grant the tax relief for in the absence of guidance from, you know, from the state. At this point, it's considered giving relief for a vehicle. A lot to be said with regard to that. So anyhow, that's just a couple of things. If it comes back around, I'd ask David if you maybe keep an eye on the General Assembly if you get any, if it passes, and I support formally anticipate that it will, in November, that we will be doing this that on January 1st. And every jurisdiction, county or municipality, will have to put some flesh on those bones as far as which particular vehicle is going to be granted that. That factually, when you're looking at a area associated with, you know, Fort Epping Hill, Fort Lee, and believe it or not, people don't consider Savannah, you know, being a, you know, military installation area. We have a lot of folks who live here that are associated with the Jake School in Charleston. So it does impact us. They're not on active duty, but to be surprised them in the military, do retire in this area. It's a nice, comfortable distance from Northern Virginia, and you can still run down the garage for purposes if you need. So it will impact us. So that's just a small part of that that we'd like to ask the state to give us a little bit more, what's to unify that decision across the Commonwealth, as to how we apply it in every commission process. Beyond that, we look forward to continuing to serve our citizens. We are now in a second, billing cycle. Ms. Lindhurst and our building have been open since May, and we have been able to entertain our public coming in throughout the day. And so that's been a good, that's worked well. Anticipated to be a bit of a problem as we move into the heavy 2 or 3 weeks of the collection cycle in December. But we, as we always have in Savannah, we'll find a way to manage it and make it work. So thank you for your time. Thanks for everyone for your part. And I'll turn back over to Mr. O'Brien.
Thank you. And Ms. Letter.
I'd just like to say thank you to our state senators. And you're working very hard down there, and it's a very difficult time. And a special thank you to our local officials. It's been a very trying time for Fluvanna County. It's been a trying time for our citizens. It's been very difficult for some who have lost jobs, who've been, you know, furloughed or whatever has been their family situations. I work very closely with those people, and our Board of Supervisors has been very lenient with their penalties and our interest, and that's meant a lot to our Fluvanna County people who want to pay their taxes, but under some circumstances it's been very difficult. Just a special thank you to everyone on our board that understands this, and we are open to the public. Our bills went out this week. We've had numerous people to come in. I have numerous calls from people, and we're working with them on payment agreements to get their taxes paid. So just a special thank you to everyone that's trying to help every citizen throughout the Commonwealth. Thank you.
Thank you. We appreciate your hard work in these trying times as well, too. And fortunately, our collection numbers have been pretty solid, so that's great. That helps. Especially with the uncertainty around budgets. Next, we'll move on to the school board. So we have Mrs. Stewart and Mr. Kelly, Dr. Kelly. I'll start with Mrs. Stewart.
Thank you very much. I would like to actually extend thanks to our Board of Supervisors for all the work that they've done to help support the schools as far as the CARE Act fund has been distributed. It's also very encouraging to hear that it's sounding like there won't be a penalty for us with the ADM. As you may realize, it's been very difficult making the best decisions for our children and our staff as far as the schools go. And we do have a meeting next week in which we'll be making a decision about the next step in opening or remaining virtual for the Fluvanna students. So please keep us in your thoughts. I know that our community has lots of mixed feelings about what the best thing to do is. So I'd love to thank you all for your help.
Thank you, Mrs. Stewart. Dr. Kelly.
Can you hear me okay?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Oh, wonderful. Thank you. Yeah, I'd just like to echo what Shirley said. It is a difficult year for everybody, and it's especially difficult for our teachers and the administration in finding ways to protect our students' health while also maximizing instruction time. And so knowing that we have legislators, and our Board of Supervisors doing their best to look out for our budget and to ensure that we have the support we need really sort of lines that load and allows us to focus on what I think is our primary goal, which is really to serve our students in the safest way possible. And also to Ms. Stewart's note, there's a lot of good, helpful, thoughtful, critical public discourse related to sort of what comes next, and I'm looking forward to continuing to hear those arguments and receive feedback and collectively try to figure out how we can best keep our kids safe. So, thank you all.
And I think,
Ms. Gillen, do you have anything you want to add?
No, thank you. We appreciate the time and everyone working together. I'm so encouraged to hear about the Hold Harmless on the enrollment laws, because that's what's really been keeping me awake at night, just trying to keep everyone in place in terms of being able to provide services to our students with not knowing our funding is certainly been a challenge. And certainly continuing to work with the broadband funding, we certainly find in this situation where we're virtual primarily at this point, the biggest barrier for our students is not having reliable internet at home, and also our teachers for that matter. It's not, sometimes it's a matter of not being able to afford what's available, but many times it's that there's literally nothing available in that area. So continuing to work on those two pieces are going to be huge for us. So thank you so much for your support and taking the time to listen to everyone's concerns and just being flexible when the time calls for it.
Absolutely. We are coming into our meeting yesterday, there were some folks outside the doors of the library there just sitting down and getting on the internet from school. So it is a challenge, as you said. And we're lucky to some degree, but there's still a lot left to do to bring broadband to Savannah County. We have Mr. Stribling on Zoom as well here too. Mr. Stribling, would you like to pipe in?
Very short, just want to echo Ms. Gillen. Appreciate the support both from the state, our Board of Supervisors, and our local school board, just to allow us the ability to work with our families and work with our students. That's what we're here for, and appreciate it. So thank you very much.
And I'd like, since obviously law enforcement is still a big part of what's going on here, if the sheriff's not online, I certainly would invite Major Wells to speak.
I guess I'll give everybody's thanks to the state legislator. I think we were kind of outnumbered on some of the law enforcement bills. I know I spoke with Delegate Bell several times. I bugged him with emails, my 2 cents worth on some of these proposed laws, but I think the die is cast on those. We're just going to deal with the ramifications depending on what versions get passed. I expect a lot of unintended consequences and some unfunded mandates probably come down from that, but again, until the ink's dry, governor signature, we don't know exactly what that's going to be. The only other thing I ask the legislators to think about is mental health issues. We are seeing a strong increase in our mental health call volume with the limited funding with the mental hospitals from years ago when that got pulled back. It does create quite a burden on law enforcement as far as transporting mental health patients. And it's probably not the best for their mental health to have to get back in a police car and be driven, 6 hours possibly to get services. So that's the only thing I'll throw out there. Thank you.
Excellent. And we're ready to open up to questions, I think, at this point in time. And I'll take on Major Wells' point on mental health, because I think it's something that we tend to overlook, but of course has a huge effect on residents when their situations change, when they're under pressure for their jobs, when they're at home, when they can't take their kids to school. So I think that's a nice segue, and I know that's one of Mr. Bell's, Delegate Bell's, hot buttons, but one of his favorite issues, and I know he's fought hard for that. So I'll invite him to speak on that first, since we had almost an indirect question on that matter.
Mr. Chair, I want to lose. I had a question for the education people. I'm happy to start talking. Are we at the general talk phase, or do you want to?
We are at the general talk phase.
Okay. Mr. Chair, we get a lot of questions, and this, I just don't have any current information. Could someone from the education team talk to us about sort of where things are in terms of opening, kids coming back, which kids, schedules, that kind of thing? I think that would be helpful probably to all of us who are fielding calls.
It would be, but when you get a chance, if you could talk about mental health, that would be great, too.
Yeah, sure. So there have been a number of proposals related to mental health. We all called it the Deeds Commission. It's not its official title, but it's a year-round study group that addresses mental health issues. And we have established a priority list. If you hear something called STEP Virginia, what it is we went through and ultimately gave a prioritization to the various resources that people are asking for. So there's been a very significant debate about what should happen when law enforcement responds to a mental health call. And I think that the sheriff would tell you, and certainly they've shared with me, that the law enforcement people would be delighted to have that be handled through the mental health. The mental health professionals would come on the call with them or even in lieu of them. At this point, there is no such build-out. And so at 2 in the morning when someone's having a decompensating episode in their front yard or at the store or something, the only people who are available to take that call, of course, are the sheriff's office. And so right now, that's how the system works. One of the longer-term projects would be to try to find a different way to address that. There was a bill that was passed. It was completely independent of the Deeds Commission, and it's passed the House, passed the Senate, and so it's headed for the governor. If he signs it, it would sort of take that idea outside of the STEP Virginia process and just sort of by fiat say that it will happen. It doesn't provide the details. It says there'll be a task force that will develop the details, so it's hard to identify exactly what that will look like. I think that anybody from rural jurisdiction understands the problem is that Arlington has both wealth and density. Most places have either or and some have neither. And so if you are a wealthy jurisdiction and very dense, it makes sense to have 24/7. Their response teams that literally are available at 4 in the morning to meet people at the jail and sort of take over from there. It is hard to see how that will fully work in a place like Flavanna unless you had unlimited resources. In other words, to keep a team of people 24/7 available in Flavanna. The sheriff doesn't have a team, but got a very modest staffing after midnight. So I think we're trying to find the best way to get there while being realistic about resources and just how many calls come in. And that's sort of where we stand on the mental health. Thank you.
I guess you had a question for the educators here as well, too, if you would care to repeat that.
Right. It's just a very general question, which would be different jurisdictions, of course, are coming in at different rates. I saw Almar made a big announcement yesterday. Would appreciate just any feedback you can share on how things look in Flavanna expectations. Obviously, some of it you probably said already, we just missed it.
I could speak to that if you'd like. At our board meeting a couple of months ago, we decided that we would open virtually, but we would also have our neediest students within the SPED world who actually came into the schools. I know that there are other districts that have had different populations that are coming in. As I said before, we do have a meeting next week in which we need to determine what is going to happen at the beginning of November. And it could be any range from remaining virtual to inviting in different populations to go in hybrid. The board needs to make that determination. So right now it is just the neediest of the SPED kids who are coming in because of the difficulty for them dealing with learning virtually. And I understand that there are other populations that it's very hard for, younger students, students with different handicapping conditions. So that's something that our board will be visiting next week.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Stribling, looked like you wanted to say something too. No? No, is that okay?
Ms. Stewart covered it.
What is the sort of projected drop in our student population right now?
Right now it's about 150 students.
And
the majority are kindergarten. but it does kind of cross all grade spans.
And based upon the hold, if we were not held harmless, what would that equate to roughly?
Between $800,000 and $900,000.
Right. So that's a big number there for sure. And yes, do you anticipate a drop into the next school year cycle?
I honestly believe that, because I've been looking at the birth rates over the last several years, and there's no real dip in birth rates. So that indicates to me, we saw about a 60 student drop in kindergarten this year. So I believe that there are some parents that chose to hold their kids out of kindergarten thinking that next year may be different, and I can understand that. So I anticipate that next year we'll start to see that rebound and may even exceed what we had projected in terms of our kindergarten. We did have a large class to go out at the high school. It was almost 300 students that graduated, and our typical kindergarten classes have been running about 220. So we knew there was going to be that drop, but we've seen 150 drop over our projection, and so that's where my concern is.
Mm-hmm. If I can add something.
Yes, sir.
Senator Peek put in a bill for this general session that would give local school division administrators the discretion on emergency drills, fire, hurricane, etc., and health screening. I know that came out of the Senate, I believe unanimously, and I'm wondering if Delegates Ware or Bell can give us an update on where that is in the House at this time.
Delegate Ware?
Mr. Chairman, I have not seen that bill, and we've had a number of Senate bills to it, but that has not come. I have not seen an education committee, House Education Committee scheduling. So if it were to come through the Education Committee, I'd be concerned. If it came through the Budget Committees, the Appropriations Committee, of course, is continuing to meet, and that would be an option. But I have not seen that.
Yeah, and I'm looking right now, and it's stuck in education. The House Committee on Education, I don't believe, had any meetings. And the Speaker has made clear that we are done with new legislation or committee meetings. The only things left are those bills that are in conference. So I don't hope I'm not the one bringing the bad news, but it doesn't look very promising.
Thank you.
If I could follow up also on a couple of other topics.
Yes, sir, please.
One first with a little bit more bad news, and that is on the electoral side. For a number of years, I've carried a budget amendment to increase funding for electoral boards and registrars because we have not kept pace since the supplemental funds that came in after the Florida general election debacle, gosh, now 20 years ago, and we used that money to do some improvements and equipment purchasing, but that's lapsed, and so Virginia, we have not kept pace just on our general obligations, let alone with these new tremendous number of new provisions this time. I will say in the House, and I suspect it probably occurred in the Senate as well, we did push back very strongly that if the Commonwealth is going to expand the voting process with drop boxes and mailing, that there should be supplements to the localities. And Cannon, one of the majority delegates, simply said, well, that's something the localities have always picked up. They're just going to have to pick it up, and I don't think that's an acceptable long-term response, particularly with the number of obligations, mandates that have been put on you. So that's we will continue to push. I know my colleagues and I feel very strongly about that. I thank Mr. Blunt for his picking up on the broadband as well, because he's exactly right. There's been a significant expansion in funds available. Just over the last 3 years, it's gone from $1 million at the Commonwealth to $17 million and in this current budget, it's gone to 50 million. In addition to increased revenue, there's also something of a loosening of the restrictions on that money. There are more localities are eligible, including, I would think, Fluvanna would have increased opportunity to apply for that, some of that funding, because of the problems, the challenges people face, particularly with schooling, but also in the working from home. So just wanted to follow up on that.
Yeah, broadband is certainly a major issue in our county. We're fortunate that we have Central Virginia Electric Co-op, which covers 85% of our county, and they have a big push to complete and provide fiber to the home for that 85%. But we certainly have a population that is completely unserved and underserved, and that's been our focus, is trying to figure out how can we fill that gap. So they're not lagging behind, and certainly from the pandemic, from a teleworking standpoint, from a telehealth, from an education standpoint, that's proved to be very challenging for some areas of our county that just have absolutely no or very poor service. So anything that can be done to help with a broadband solution, and like I said, I saw the email that came out from the governor's office about kind of fast tracking some of the funding to expand broadband. So we'll be looking into that more to see what we can do from our a local level to expand broadband.
Yeah, I would definitely second that, and saying that, you know, I think if we've learned anything from this pandemic is just how reliant and important it is to our citizens. You know, being able to work from home is no longer sort of, I think in my mind, going to be kind of a nicety. I think it's going to be a reality for a lot of companies, and they're learning along the way that their employees can be productive, they can be happy, they can reduce their time and commuting, and so we're going to see folks that want to do that. And for a rural county, it's a great asset to have in place. So we are fortunate that we will be one of the counties that in 3 to 4 years will probably be one of the most connected counties in Virginia. But that's just dumb luck, if you would. You know, it's not because there's been, I think, as much energy and effort as could be put into it. And when you, as you put it, went from 1 million to 25 million to 50 million, that's fantastic. But as I'm sure you all know, CVEC invested almost 100 million, with a lot of funds coming, granted, from the state and from localities and so on. But it's that kind of vision that says, how do we change? And I will certainly say that Fluvanna will benefit from the standpoint of its citizens being happier, real estate values, and just the general ability to compete in the world marketplace. So it is critical. Do we have some other questions? Quiet group here.
So Mr. O'Brien, maybe
I'll start it.
Go ahead, Mr. Sheridan. Mr. Sheridan, go ahead.
Oh, thank you, sir. I just try to get some of the, yes, thank you. Trying to get just the legislative perspective. I know we're going to a new national census, and what do you think the timeline is for the subsequent redistricting, you know, statewide for the House and Senate seats? And all that, and I know you all are going to certainly be there to contribute, but when do you anticipate those redistricting efforts will be coming forward? Back sometime after the next session, next spring, timeline?
And that's a great question. I would just add on also, what would be the impact of the constitutional amendment if it passes?
So you identified the two things, both of them we don't know at this point. The first would be, let's say the constitutional amendment first, because it's maybe not easier but simpler. If it doesn't pass, then redistricting is just handled by a bill. Typically, the bill would be in a special session in the summer, both so that it doesn't sort of overtake the entire regular session, and then also just because you have to wait till the census numbers come out. If the constitutional amendment does pass, then there would be a commission appointed pursuant to its terms. It has legislators, it has non-legislators. we haven't had one of these before, so beyond reading what's in the amendment, I don't know how it'll specifically work, but it requires public hearings, and then they would have to present a plan that would then be presented to the General Assembly. Again, that would be, if we meet in January through March, take a break, and then when we can get to it. The other variable, though, that no one knows will be, when will these census numbers be ready? And so Virginia is one of only three states on an off cycle, meaning for the rest of the world, the rest of the country, I guess, they're in a hurry, but they're not in some overwhelming hurry, because they've got until 2022 to get everything in order. Because Virginia has these off-year elections, we have to be ready by, you can do the math, I mean, the election is in November of 2021. Those of us who are elected can understand what it would be like to say, well, I don't know where I'm running, I don't know what I'm running for, but maybe I'd like to run, but I don't have a district yet. We're not. And so I think that we don't know when the census, obviously the challenge has been presented by COVID, that the people that sent their returns in, it didn't change, but all the in-person door knocking has been substantially impacted by it. And so we don't know. We are not driving this bus. It'll be when the national federal census numbers come in. They are aware that this impacts us differently. I think it's us, Mississippi, New Jersey, have off-year cycles, but for the rest of the country, they're not in any particular hurry. I just want to get it right. So I wish I had, those are the variables, and I've told you all that we know, and I wish I had more definitive answers, but that's sort of what we're looking at. Lee may ask something else.
I really can't add to that. Other than to say, I have spoken to the folks in our Privileges and Elections Committees to see if they have gotten any kind of further or inside information, and from what I've been told, they have not heard anything more definitive than what you see in the public press about the potential for delays for the census because of the reasons Rob alluded to.
Is there a general expectation as to the success of the constitutional or failure of the constitutional amendment that's discussed at your level there?
It's been, there are advocates on both sides, so I think there'll be a lot of interest in it. But I would be hesitant to speculate at this point on its likelihood of success.
Mr. Chairman, this is David. If I could add, I just saw, really looking at the General Assembly meeting schedule this morning, that what I guess would be an initial meeting for this time around of the Joint Reapportionment Committee, which is composed of legislators who sit on both the House and the Senate Privileges and Elections Committees, is having its meeting, its first meeting next Tuesday, with some reports from the Division of Legislative Services staff. In that group, I believe the legislators can, I'm sure, know more about it than I do, really kind of looks at issues related to the numbers, the census data, and then how the precinct data, that type of thing, is apportioned.
Hey, Mr. Chairman, I'm just going to add and follow up. I guess, of course, that's going to trickle right down to the locality. So as the federal numbers are digested, and then General Assembly's looking at its redistrict, and we're in the same position locally, so we have to at least handle that redistricting of the county as it may be necessary for that same election next November. So it really is a hurry up and wait scenario for us. You know, from my perspective, we've never been just so blessed to have legislators with seniority that the three of y'all that represent us with. You don't have to be in government very long to realize that it takes longevity in General Assembly to be in a position to actually start to affect some things. So thank you all for what you've done. I hope we are fortunate enough to keep all three of y'all. It's been really nice to delegates and senators that have tenure enough that they're in positions that can make some real impact. So I hope the Lord continues to bless us with legislators who have some seniority. Thank you.
Mr. Dahl, you were going to make a point.
No, I was just going to let you know, Mr. O'Brien. So on the back of the green agenda sheet there, we had sent out previously just kind of some, you know, locality and state legislative concerns. We sent this out to everyone. Some of these topics we have touched on already, but there are some areas that I think that maybe we haven't touched on, you know, specifically health and human services. I don't know if Karen Abair with social services or Brian Moeller in CSA, if they want to add anything or if they have any questions. But I'm not sure if Karen, do you have anything to add or any questions or anything you want to advocate for?
Not this moment, I don't think. I mean, obviously, we're always, our biggest funding thing right now, and I would say, would be for the elderly. We really have a hard time working, meeting the needs of our elderly because we have such small funding packets for them. Obviously, the children's programs, too, they always need, but I think the elderly is the program that we get the least funding for and would be something that we would really want to advocate for in the future.
Could I ask a question on that? What portion of the budget does that flow through, the funding that you do receive, that comes via what bucket of money?
It comes through the state. And it's the money we get a small portion of money. It's like only about $2,000 a year that comes directed to work with Adult Protective Services. And we get, like I said, approximately $2,000 a year. We can go back sometime and ask for some more money, but it's still pretty limited. And when you're thinking about the whole population, and that's just for working with the abused population. That's not specifically for working with just the elderly in general.
Thank you.
Yeah, and I guess that in a general sense, sort of the elephant in the room is we all have the expectation that, you know, God willing, we're in much better shape in a few months than we are right now, and that we will be able to strengthen our budgets. But I know as you go into the next legislative session here, that will be in your minds as to what happens if we are still deep into this pandemic and we aren't seeing the light at the end of the tunnel. How much of a change could we see from the state at that point in time? Do you expect that to be part of the conversation and the outlook for the state down the road?
Well, my crystal ball is somewhat limited. I've heard people joke that after November 3rd, things will clear up on the pandemic question. I don't know whether or not that's people's lighthearted take on a difficult subject. I don't know, but obviously we're all waiting and very much subject to the same challenges that you are in terms of the pandemic. We are 2.8 billion shortfall at the state level, as I mentioned, and we will come back in. We have it's a multi-step process for building the budget. The governor has a group of economists who will come in and see it later this month or early November, and then the governor's advisory council on revenue estimates, which are business folks and senior legislators on the money committees. I've had the good fortune of serving on that for a number of years now. We will give our best estimates to the governor and his budget-making team, and then in mid-December, he will, as has been alluded to, and again, Mr. Blunt mentioned that sequence, he will present his views. Obviously, one of the big unknowns for us is what may come as a successor to the CARES Act, or if there will be a successor to the CARES Act, and what will be the strings attached to it. I know one of the challenges that I've heard, particularly from the counties, is that the CARES Act money that's come to the localities, there's such a tight time frame to getting that deployed that in a number of instances, projects that would make sense to, for example, upgrade the air system in the school building, it's hard to get that done under the time constraint. So that to say, we face a lot of the same variables that you all face. So there's a lot of unknowns.
Right. Not only is it hard to get it done, but you see surge pricing. We recently had a bid out, and it came about 100% over budget, a little bit more than that, what we anticipated. And, you know, again, it was because of the extra overtime costs involved, the extra material costs. So certainly that timeline is tough, and I know that isn't dependent on you, but certainly as you're looking at the programs that you're putting in place to benefit localities, timing is an important thing. From the state level there, I mean, I'm sorry, for the federal level there, for the congressman's office and for the senator's office, there was a lot of robust discussion here yesterday about the guidance from the Treasury Department with regard to the ability to use part of the CARES funding for payroll for emergency personnel and how those costs could be allocated. So that moving target is always a challenge for everybody.
As Mr. O'Brien stated, you know, just really the guidance that has come out from the Treasury and then the Office of Inspector General, it has been a moving target since the pandemic started. And granted, you know, the pandemic is something new, it's something we haven't dealt with before, but having a little more concrete guidance earlier on that is kind of in place, I am certain would be very helpful for us counties to be able to make the decisions to do what we need. And if that guidance can't be given at an earlier point, you know, it would be nice if there were some more leeway as far as, you know, time extensions to be able to do the things with some of these funds that we feel that are necessary to offset, you know, some of the new expenses and put in place measures to offset the pandemic. So that's been a little bit of a frustration from just, you know, I know finance staff has been on webinars weekly with a moving target all the time. So that's been a little frustrating from kind of the federal level and the guidance that's been put out.
I'm looking at just trying to look at the Zoom board. Are any of the federal guys still here, gals, anybody?
We have Ms. Herbert still with us.
They might have some, not to be funny, but of course we can't run deficit spending in Richmond. And some of these issues you're addressing would be dependent on federal pass-through. I don't know if any of the federal officials are.
Yeah, I think I just
able to give us any guidance that we're not seeing in newspapers about what to expect. That would be useful, I think, for us as well.
If they're
still on.
Ms. Abbott?
Steve Harvey. Steve Harvey's on.
I'm Steve Harvey's late.
Okay. Yeah.
Mr. Harvey?
I'm happy to ask this along. Can you guys hear me?
It's a little challenging. Could you repeat yourself, please?
Can you guys hear me?
Yes, sir. Go ahead, please. Yes, sir.
It's got really low bandwidth.
Mr. Harvey, it looks like your internet connection may be challenging here.
Again, the further need for broadband.
We have one on the TJPDC. We have Mr. Babcock, and oftentimes it sounds like he's had a few martinis when he's on because of his internet connection. But if you're there, Mr. Harvey, could you try again?
He sent a note that he doesn't have.
Okay, he's not there. All right, so I guess we don't, Delegate Bell, have anybody that can respond to your question.
There may be one other person. He's checking to see if she's available.
Okay.
We
only have a few minutes left. So.
Hey, Mr. Chairman. It's Mel again, if you got a sec. I was just going to ask you guys at the General Assembly if y'all anticipate, and I know you're having to anticipate, if the GA building will be open for us to make our, you know, trip down and try to meet with y'all, or have you got any guidance from, you know, from leadership, whether that's going to be the case or whether it's going to be closed down and we should not plan to come back?
We asked the question yesterday, not Lee or I, it was Kathy Byron, who's our caucus chair, And she just, I mean, the speaker identified the problems, which is we don't know where we will be in January. But truthfully, the decision won't be made in January. It will be, I'm assuming, November 15th. In other words, at some point, very soon, we need to make a decision. And there are similarities that the schools go through where they're identifying something and making a decision that will have to then be executed in a period of time later. But we, I don't want to speak for Lee, but I'm pretty sure he agrees that this has been a great challenge to do it this way, has been modestly successful at best, and clearly reduces the ability for people to work on bills, come forward and be heard, show up for a meeting, and identify issues. There's been a whole lot, the man is close enough that we have had over the years, oh my goodness, Jeff Hazlett comes down at least once for the session, the sheriff's office often says people, we're not that far. And this, I think everybody in the IT staff is doing the best they can, so this is not a, it's just the method that we're using here today works best for 7 people. It works a lot less well for 100. And you add in staff, and you add in all the people that are interested. It's not been, we have muddled through, but it's certainly not ideal. And I think, I would certainly hope we can find a way to do it more traditionally, but I don't know. It's not a clean.
Yeah, I would say we've been in the dark, but we have not been given a lot of indications. The Capitol, I am told, is the building itself is closed until January 1st. But there's a lot of uncertainty as to whether it will reopen and whether we'll be in session. I devoutly hope that we will be, for a lot of the reasons that Rob alluded to. No, as much as anything, Mel, it's public participation. We gain a lot in the legislative session, hearing from folks like you or ordinary citizens who come down and who have relevant subject knowledge that amplifies and clarifies what we do. I hope it sincerely, but right now that we don't know.
Yes, actually, because I know a lot of us will come down and speak to committee hearings with regard to, you know, proposed legislation that impacts our offices. And if we don't have that opportunity, it really handicaps y'all and I guess will frustrate us. I know this isn't ideal, Zoom meetings, but if it's not open, if y'all are in session and we are not able to come down, you know, as may be necessary, you know, having your legislative aid, someone that can act on your behalf, which they do 24/7 during session, in the Zoom meeting, at least gives us some availability to try to reach out and ask y'all to consider this or that about an issue. But I appreciate you, Cam. No one knows, but Lord, it would be simply, much simpler if we could move forward and Zoom in-person meetings as opposed to trying to make that internet all work and beg some young person on staff to help me make the computer come on and function properly.
Thank you. Yeah, I was going to say, Mr. Chair, it's just after 10:30 when the meeting was supposed to end. I just wanted to do a couple things. First, thank you to the legislators for what you're doing right now and for the work that's still ahead. I know these are trying times, and we thank you for taking part in this again every year as you do. Although you're doing it a little different this year, we hope to see everyone's smiling faces in person next time. But if not, we'll continue to tread on like we have been. I want to thank David Blount and Kelly Harris for kind of putting this together and reaching out to the legislators and different elected officials to put this on like we have. It's helpful for the county, and it's even probably more helpful in these trying times. And I think the next thing, unless there's any further comments, I guess Mr. O'Brien, I guess the only thing we have left to do, unless there's any further comments by the elected officials, is to go ahead and adjourn the meeting.
Certainly welcome any final comments from the elected officials here.
Oh. Thank you, Mr. O'Brien, for standing in place of that chair. We missed him, but you did a wonderful job. Thank you.
Thank you, my friend.
And you all enjoy the rest of the week.
I will finish simply by saying that there's never enough time, especially in these days, to get everything done, but as Mr. Dahl said, and as everybody's expressed, it's helpful to do these things here. The last three questions we had on our agenda, and I'll just read them out very quickly. How will localities be helped, supported, accommodated, provided for while dealing with the new challenges brought about the challenges of responding to the pandemic fallout? Will there be help to restore and strengthen local economies? And will help? What help will there be for protecting local communities and their revenue stream? I know these are burning questions on your mind. I'm not asking you to answer those, but they were listed as important questions from our standpoint. And of course, they are important questions, and I know you face them as well, too. This is a time for everybody to come together and do what's best for our citizens and accept those challenges. So again, I thank you, and lastly, I'll take a motion to adjourn the meeting.
So moved. I'm moved to adjourn the meeting.
Second.
All right. With that, then I call this meeting over and out. Everybody have a wonderful day. Thank you very much.
Thank you, everyone.